Okay, I'm going to call to order this meeting of the Senate Committee on the Environment and Natural Resources. Welcome, everyone. Today is, what is it, Wednesday the 7th? Is that right? 10.
We lost those 3 days.
Here in the legislature, we are on our own, in our own time zone. Anyway, welcome, everyone. We have a number of bills to consider today, and we have several legislators here. And so we're going to hear from them first. So I'm going to open up bills and then put bills into recess while we get through all the legislators so they can go back and do their real work. Then we'll reopen the bills to take public testimony. So with that, I'm going to start with House Bill 2525. And Reps Bueller and Brocksmith, if you would come up. And Beth, could you tell us what this bill does?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2525A would expand authorization for the inspection of game meat that's donated to a charitable organization to include animal processing establishments approved and trained by ODA. There is a dash 2 and a dash 3 amendment on OLIS.
Okay, thank you. Rep Bueller, did you want to start?
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair Dembro. For the record, my name is Representative Newt Bueller. I represent House District 54, which is most of the city of Bend, and I bring to you today House Bill 2525, which passed unanimously out of committee and had broad bipartisan support in the House. What this bill does is try to solve in a small way a serious problem we have in Oregon with regards to food insecurity. Even though our economy has improved substantially, we still have a big problem with poverty and people who routinely go to bed hungry. We have a great network of food banks in the state of Oregon right now, but they also struggle with one big problem, and that's having access to protein. The origin of this bill is from some of the hunters in Central Oregon who routinely go out and have weekend trips, especially shooting a lot of game birds. And as you can imagine, across the state, there's hundreds of thousands of game birds that are killed in the state of Oregon every year. Unfortunately, right now, most of those game birds and protein that they produce goes to waste if the hunters themselves don't consume them. So a constituent of mine who is an OSU professor came to me with this solution because he was bothered by the waste that he saw routinely on a lot of these game hunting ranches. He researched extensively and found that over half the states in Oregon have, or half the states in the United States, have the ability to donate process game meat to food banks. This is based on that legislation, and this is what's before you today.
Great, thank you. Rep. Brocksmith.
Chair Dimbro, committee. David Brocksmith, State Representative, House District 1, Southwest Oregon. Just to add to what the good representative has already said, I've been involved with the food pantries for a number of years with my former hats, and the access to protein is always a difficulty. We have lots of family folks in my neck of the woods that love to go hunting and do so, but would love to donate some of those game meat to our local food pantries around Southwest Oregon. This bill is a welcome fix to help with that problem, and I am very supportive and appreciate the committee's time.
Great. Questions of the sponsors? There are a couple of amendments that have been proposed, and Rep. Bueller, you proposed one of them. Seems like just a technical wording thing.
Yeah.
And then there's one that we'll be hearing about that has some concerns about lead ammunition.
Yeah.
And do you want to say anything about
certainly,
that?
Certainly, Chair Denver, I can speak to that. There is no evidence. We've done a scientific review of the literature. There's no evidence that lead in any kind of meat provides any hazard to consumption. It's routinely the meat around the site of bullet or any lead is cut out of the animal or the game bird. The Department of Agriculture has no concerns with regards to that risk to human consumption.
Agreed.
And just to follow up, I've been told that for bird fowl, lead shot can't be used anymore. Is that?
For waterfowl.
For waterfowl, right. For waterfowl, but not
Upland.
Turkey or landfill, is that right?
Upland.
Upland birds.
Upland birds.
Is that the term? Okay,
yeah.
Great. Land birds.
Yes.
They fly sometimes.
Okay, thank you both very much.
Yeah, thank
before
you,
they, before they go, I have one question, because I want this on the record. Game meat does not refer to fish?
That is, I'm not sure about that question. So in terms of definition, game meat doesn't include fish?
Does it include fish?
This bill does include fish.
Does include fish.
Yep.
I have real concerns because ODFW has taken away all the bag limits on smallmouth bass on all the rivers, which means that there could be a huge predation. Guys going out catching 50, 60, so I have a case of 78 walleye.
Mean they'd go out and catch?
They catch 78 walleye and they keep them, but you know there's nobody can eat 78 walleye.
That's why we have the food bank.
Pardon?
Yeah, so how does that relate to this bill?
Well, that's why I want no game meat. If it's game meat and they can use the fish as a game, considered to be game meat. That's why I asked the question, is fish considered the game meat? I didn't think it was in the bill, but that's why I want to ask the question to get it on the record.
Yeah, I believe fish would be included in this. They could donate it to the food banks.
And so my point is that what do you put your finger up for there?
That's good. But all these people would have bass to eat. That's a good thing.
That's my point.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you both very much.
Yep.
Thanks, Rep. Buehler.
Yep, thank you.
Brock Smith, you want to stay in? Okay, so I'm going to recess our hearing on 2525 and open our public hearing on House Bill 2499. And Beth, you want to say something about this?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2499 would establish a process for a seller of a vessel permit for a limited entry fishery to obtain a preliminary injunction that allows the seller to continue to fish under a permit while a claim is pending against the buyer for not fulfilling the terms of the sale.
Okay. Representative.
Chair of Denborough Committee. This is another
Representative,
fix.
Could you put your name on the record
again? I apologize. State Representative David Brocksmith, House District 1, Southwest Oregon. Thank you, Chair Denborough and committee. This is another fixed bill. It really works in two ways, but then also does three things in doing so. Basically, this will allow the seller of a vessel permit, which are limited in number, and are really, in a lot of cases, a fisherman's retirement, and they go in upwards of $250,000. It would allow the seller to get an injunction from a court to stop the buyer who has bought the permit from using the permit until the case has been resolved in court if there's lack of payment for the permit. And then during that time, it also allows the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, if the injunction is granted, to reissue a permit, a temporary permit, to the seller so that they can continue fishing and therefore generating revenue to support their family and so forth that they aren't receiving from the payment of the permit. But also, what it also, and more importantly almost, is it would allow more security for that seller of the permit to sell to a younger fisherman that wants to get into the industry. We have a situation where not a lot of 20-somethings, if you will, can afford a $250,000, $300,000 investment to become a commercial fisherman. And this bill would allow more security for a seller to be able to sell that permit to someone who wants to start this as a career. And it gives the security to the seller to do so. There's a situation where these, like, as I said before, these permits are limited in number. There's a finite number. And so whenever you have a seller that's selling the permit, there's a lot of larger organizations that will buy these permits, and they're lost in our smaller local fishery communities forever. So this is a fix to that. And I can answer any questions. I will say that it did pass over in the House on a bipartisan vote.
Okay, thank you, Representative. Senator Roblin, you're also a sponsor of this.
Yeah, it's a good bill should pass. I mean, we're trying to figure out how do we do a couple of different things. If they're having a contest over the sale, the person who owned the permit to begin with can continue to fish that permit by having a special permit until the sale is complete. That's for the person that can buy outright buy the deal, and they figured it out. And again, the other one is you can enter in. A lot of fishermen want to keep those permits locally, and they're going to take the risk to sell it to this young person. That person can probably buy it if they have a lot of good seasons in a row. I mean, you've got to earn the money to pay for that permit. And so there is a risk that they aren't going to be able to do that. So this says I can get it back and fulfill the permit if I have to, if the seller can't fulfill their bargain. And it gives them a little bit more assurance that I'm going to take the risk on this kid, because I really do believe oftentimes it's ship hands and others that have worked with the people for a long time and they're trying to work into the business. It used to be pretty easy to do on the coast. It's not so easy anymore because of the limited permit activity that's going on around a number of fisheries.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let me recess our hearing on this bill, House Bill 2499, and open our public hearing on House Bill 3147, which is the final Brock Smith bill of the day.
Of the day. Be right. Sure and say that.
Yes.
Okay.
Beth?
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 3147 would require the director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, when making appointments to the Hatchery Research Center Board, to consult with and take nominations or recommendations from organizations that represent or are engaged in the same interests that the appointees are required to represent.
Chair Dimbro, committee, David Brock Smith, State Representative, House District 1. The bill pretty much does what Beth has outlined. It's just a fix that basically would have the commissions look at the credentials of the appointees for the through the Hatchery, Oregon Hatchery Research Board. Before they're appointed. It's very simple.
Any questions?
Yeah, I'll just add on to it and just basically say in the Oregon Hatchery Research Center, and if you haven't been to LC to look at it, it's a pretty amazing facility, allowing us to really look at how fish handle being in hatcheries. Each one of the board members represents a group of people. So it could be commercial fishermen, it could be recreational fishermen, it could be so on. And basically what this says is be sure to talk to the organizations that are out there that represent those people and try to get nominations from them before you make the decision. Because we think that the more input we get from local communities and others that care about this stuff, the greater chance this facility will be able to solve some problems that we've had with fisheries for a long time.
Okay. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Was there anyone else who wanted to speak on this, House Bill 3147? Okay, I'll close our public hearing on House Bill 3147. We'll schedule a work session. Was there anyone else who wanted to speak on House Bill 2499?
A couple of people.
Oh.
There's two back there. Do you want to take them?
Okay. Let's get this out of the way.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Rollator. I represent Seafood Oregon, which is the four commodity commissions of ocean commercial fishermen. And this bill, this is a good bill, and I think Representative Smith explained very well, and Senator Roblin, what it does. I met with some fishermen this morning to talk to Kurt Schrader about national issues, and this issue came up, and it was very supportive from my folks. So thank you very much.
Great. Any questions? Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, I'm going to close our public hearing on House Bill 2499. And let's open our public hearing on House Bill 2027. And we're going to hear from Rep. Wisnant, but before we do that, Beth, could you tell us what this does?
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 2027A would prohibit the construction of any bridge within a designated area of the Deschutes Scenic Waterway.
Okay. Rep. Wisnant, what have you gotten us into here?
Good afternoon, Mr. Speaker, honorable committee members. For the record, I'm Gene Wisnant, state representative from Sun River, located on the Deschutes River. I bring you a simple but necessary bill of about 150 words, which prohibits persons, public body, or local service district from constructing a bridge on the Deschutes River with certain within certain segments of the Deschutes River waterway. Oregonians decided to protect special waterways in 1970 when they voted 2-1 to establish the Oregon Scenic Waterways Program. The Deschutes River was on the original list. The program goals are on this slide. House Bill 2027 addresses an environmental matter involving state environmental law. Your vote on this bill should be based upon scientific evidence. Scientific evidence. In 2015, biologists from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife recommended rejection of the Bend Parks and Recreation Development request to abolish the Upper Deschutes Bridge prohibition. Based upon the ODFW scientific recommendation, the Oregon Department of Parks and Recreation rejected the Bend Park and Rec Department's bridge rule amendment request in 2016. The Oregon Department of Park and Rec reported that new bridges in the Upper Deschutes Scenic Waterway may encourage development in an area where natural resources would be harmed in opposition to scenic waterway goals. On or about May the 2nd, 2017, the Upper Deschutes Advisory Group report was provided to the Oregon Park and Recreation's Director, Lisa Assumption. During a period from October 2016 to April 2017, the Upper Deschutes Advisory Group held a series of initial meetings, group orientations, public meetings, and advisory group sessions. There were also 27 meetings were held to prepare the members of this task force. The report stated that more than 81% advocated for more protections and restrictions within state scenic waterways and made specific recommendations for new protective rules. Today, after reviewing the Upper Deschutes Advisory Report, Director Lisa Assumption announced her decision not to pursue rule amendments on the Upper Deschutes State Scenic Waterway. A copy of the press release is on OLIS, which you should have. The director also stated, I would consider amending rules, especially in a way that clearly strengthens protection of the waterway. But changing rules, especially in a way that might encourage more visible waterside development, is contrary to the purpose of the scenic waterway system. I'm going to repeat that, please. The director said, I would reconsider amending rules, especially in a way that clearly strengthened protections in the waterway. Changing rules, especially in a way that might encourage more visible riverside development, is contrary to the purpose of the scenic waterway system. The director sent an email out today with the press release to all the members of the work group, the Upper Deschutes Advisory Group. And I just got this, so it's not in my testimony, but I think it's important to read. This went to the members and thanking them for their work on the report. The director said also, some people are going to be satisfied with this outcome and some will be discouraged. Our aim here is not to select the option that pleases the most people, but to choose the route that in our judgment heeds closest to the intent of the scenic waterway law. Today, Mr. Chair and Honorable Committee members, you're going to hear more testimony by experts and concerned citizens about the bridge. And please, Mr. Chair, a lot of them traveled a long way to be here, so I hope you'll have an opportunity to hear them completely. But these citizens are concerned about the ecological integrity and functionality of the riparian corridor for native wildlife. They will discuss their concerns about the elk migration, the riparian area, and impact on fish and wildlife. My intention, the intention with this bill, is not anti-recreation. One of Josie and my favorite recreational experiences we've had in Central Oregon was a 3-day canoe trip on the Upper Deschutes River, organized by the Bend Park and Recs Department and the High Desert Museum. Our intention is to help this. Our intention with House Bill 2027 is to protect the goals of the Oregon Scenic Waterway Program. An Oregon Park and Recreation Department official stated in my office that House Bill 2027, the bill you're looking at, simply reinforces current scenic waterway protection rules. Mr. Chair and Honorable Committee members, I urge your yes vote on this bill, which passed the House with all yes votes. Thank you.
Colleagues, any questions of Rep. Wisnant at this time? Okay, thank you very much, Representative. Okay, so I'm going to recess our discussion of House Bill 2027 and have us return to House Bill 2525. We have two panels. Let's hear from them. So I'm going to reopen our public hearing on House Bill 2525. That's the game meat bill. And I'll ask Jennifer Haig, Mary Coolidge, and Lena Spadacera, please.
Good afternoon, senators. I am here to speak with you today about Amendment -A3 to House Bill 2525. It's a relatively simple amendment that adds the inspection of lead in game meat that's donated to food banks to the already inspected items, which are parasite lesions and disease.
Okay, thank you. Before you proceed, could you give us your name for the record, please?
Oh, apologies. Mary Coolidge, Audubon Society of Portland. I coordinate the lead campaign for Portland Audubon. We respect and support the contribution made by hunters to the reduction of food insecurity in our state. We also believe that it is critical to include lead screening in the game meat inspection process. This is a common sense way to protect vulnerable populations in our state. There is overwhelming scientific evidence demonstrating the toxicity of lead in the human body, particularly in children. Lead is a neurotoxin that bioaccumulates in the body and affects multiple organ systems. According to the CDC, there is no safe blood lead level for children without deleterious and potentially long-term effects. Therefore, we believe that it is critical to protect children in our state by ensuring that food served to them via low-income nutritional centers, public school nutritional centers, and other charitable organizations is lead-free. A large body of research demonstrates that game meat harvested with lead ammunition can be contaminated with hundreds of lead fragments, which can travel up to 14 inches from the wound channel. Multiple studies have demonstrated that lead ammunition poses a significant source of lead exposure in humans that ingest wild game. I have provided a stack of literature for each of you that demonstrates this. A 2008 study in North Dakota found that 59% of 100 randomly selected packages of donated venison were contaminated with lead fragments, 59%. The North Dakota Department of Health has developed a fact sheet indicating that consuming wild game shot with lead ammunition is an important risk factor in elevated lead levels, and warning consumers that most lead particles in venison will be too small to see, feel, or sense when chewing. 8 states recommend against pregnant women and children eating venison harvested with lead bullets. Those are Colorado, Connecticut, Michigan, Minnesota, North Dakota, New Hampshire, New Jersey, and Wisconsin. All hunter-harvested venison in the state of Minnesota is screened for lead prior to donation to food banks. Both Michigan and Wisconsin have developed health consultation letters addressing the risk of lead in venison. Those are included in your packets. The CDC has indicated that the best way to protect children is to prevent or eliminate all sources of lead exposure in the first place. Unfortunately, there's a history in this country of ignoring lead exposure risks in too many cases for too long. Adoption of this amendment is an opportunity to be proactive and protective. We hope that you'll move forward with Amendment A3. We do appreciate Hunter's efforts to reduce food insecurity in Oregon by contributing to food banks, and we believe that we have a responsibility to ensure that it's done in a way that minimizes risk to families. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you very much, Mary.
Chairman Dembrough and members of the committee, my name is Jennifer Haig, and I'm here today representing the Humane Society of the United States to testify in support of the -3 amendment to House Bill 2525A. I'm sure you're familiar with Scott Beckstead. He's our state director, but he is out of state this week for work, so he's asked me to step in. He has submitted comments in written testimony, which I assume you have. I ask you to review that, as it is very thorough cited positions which go into a lot more detail than I'll cover here today. As Mary said, lead is a highly toxic substance, and that's our concern. It's regulated in many other ways, notably paint, gasoline, pipes, etc. The reason being to protect human health and the environment. The exception is with lead-based ammunition. You especially don't want to ingest lead, especially unknowingly. However, that's exactly what recipients of game meat from charitable organizations could be doing without this amendment. As Mary again said, it's highly fragmentable. Although, you know, the bullet enters in a particular place, it could go further, and you just don't know. So the amendment's necessary to protect the health of some of our most vulnerable citizens, especially children who are high utilizers of charitable food sources. Other food donations to charitable organizations require health and safety standards to be met. Tainted food is not suitable to donate, and neither should lead ammo-killed game meat. The bill originally specified that meat must be free of parasites or other disease, because we know that makes people sick. And we know lead exposure does too, which is why this amendment is a natural extension to the original concept. So for me, it really boils down to, would you eat it? Ask yourself, would you risk consuming lead-tainted meat? How about if you didn't know where it came from? Would you serve it to your children or your grandchildren, not knowing? If not, then why allow it to be unknowingly consumed by recipients of charitable donations when they aren't able to make an informed decision about their own health? That shouldn't be part of the already high price of being poor. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to engage on this issue. My name is Lena Spadassini, and I'm here as a private citizen. I've also worked on this issue for the better half of the last decade, and I'm here to share some information and also a concern, and I'll note that I am overall neutral on the issue. Shelters and food banks provide a critical and important support to our communities, and it's a major reason why I'm here today. I'm deeply troubled that this isn't something that is just feels like a given. We have a millennia's worth of data showing the deleterious effects and the truly damaging and irreversible damage that comes from lead exposure in humans as well as animals. And in fact, in the last century alone, we have data showing lead contamination impacting our wildlife, which is a real concern, and I know Mary and Portland Audubon can speak to that in even greater detail, the amount of resources they're spending on chelating lead poison animals. But despite all of this information, lead is still one of the most widely used components in bullets today. Although we've made great progress, I know we all know about gasoline and the paint initiatives and those industries, we've actually made great progress in ballistics as well. As noted earlier, steel shot has been required for waterfowl hunting for decades now. And my waterfowl hunting family and friends, it's a given for them. It's not even a question anymore, although it was controversial back in the 80s. There's also a lot of great resources and alternatives for non-lead bullets right here being made in Oregon, Heavy Shot and Sweet Home. And we have Barnes Bullets. There's a lot of options out there right now. However, a subset of the hunting community refuses to advance and evolve with this data that we have. This is obviously problematic, which you've already heard today, so I'll make it quick, just talking about ballistics and fragmentation. There's no question that a bullet made of lead fragments. We know that. And there is x-ray showing that it can fragment up to 400 different pieces. And in fact, it goes beyond 14 inches. There's a radiograph showing 18 inches from the wound channel. So I appreciated the representative stating earlier about cutting away from the wound channel, but I don't know anyone that is cleaning an animal up to 14 to 18 inches away from their wound channel. So inevitably, lead gets into the food chain, both human and non-human. Which is why I want to talk about donations. HB 2525 with Amendment A3. As noted before, we're endangering our most vulnerable members of society. Just on my drive here, I saw on the ballot signs for a measure 26193, which is really an initiative to address the lead in our drinking water for our students in public schools. Unfortunately, not only is lead a very damaging neurotoxicant, it's also a bioaccumulant, and the body does not discriminate, so that the body will absorb lead regardless of the source. So if you have a child drinking water during the day and then eating dinner at a food bank at night, that's two sources of potential lead exposure. HB 2525 with Amendment A3 creates a meaningful opportunity to improve the safety of a food source that is not in demand. I repeat that. This food source is not in demand. 2 years ago, I got on the phone with every single shelter here in the state of Oregon that is listed on the Hunters for Hungry website to be accepting of game meat. Majority of them said they've never received any donation, and they didn't even know the list existed. A couple of them said, yes, they have received game meat, but it's not very often, and in fact, they struggle to serve it because people prefer other proteins like chicken or beans. And then a lot of them who did say they occasionally receive game meat didn't even know that lead exposure was a potential concern. And they were very interested in more information, which I took it upon myself to provide the information that I have, but I encouraged them to look into it further. I have not followed up with those food banks since, but I imagine a lot of those concerns are similar, and I imagine the demand hasn't changed much in the last 2 years. As our elected officials, we trust in you to enact policy that improves the health and the safety and the quality of life here in our state. Passing HB 2525 unamended does the exact opposite of that. Which is why I'm here, again, neutral on the issue, but I really implore you to consider this amendment, and I would be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Lena. Colleagues, any questions of the panel? Okay, thank you very much, all three. Okay, let's hear from Stephanie Hayes, is that right? And Paige Spence and Roger Beyer. Stephanie, you want to start?
Sure. Good afternoon. My name is Stephanie Hazen. I am a retired veterinarian. I have lived in Salem from 1977 till now. I retired in 2011. I took care of dogs, cats, wildlife, birds, exotic animals. I had occasion to treat many lead-poisoned animals where my dog and cat colleagues might not have, because dogs and cats don't get lead poisoning quite as often as wild animals and parrots. So I am familiar with what lead poisoning looks like. It makes the symptoms in people and animals are the same. You get anemic, you get lethargic, you might have seizures. That would be acute lead poisoning, chronic lead poisoning, infertility, renal failure, dementia, aggression. So I am familiar with what lead poisoning is all about. An animal would come to me, and the veterinary lingo is presenting complaint, ADR, ain't doing right. So it's up to you to go pick and choose what kind of tests you're going to do. You would need an index of suspicion to test for lead poisoning. You would need an owner willing to pay for testing. You would need an owner willing to pay for the chelation treatment. You would need an owner willing to do follow-up for a long, long time. So I also know that a piece of lead the size of a grain of salt will poison you. That's not very big. I also think that people who are eating food from charitable organizations, if they ADR, ain't doing right, who's got the index of suspicion to test them for lead poisoning? Who's got the money to treat them for lead poisoning? If these people are anemic, renal failure, demented, poor reproductive abilities, who's to think about testing and treating for lead poisoning? So that is what I have to bring to you.
Thanks very much, Stephanie. Paige?
Good afternoon, Chair Dembro and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of the A3 amendment to House Bill 2525. The Oregon League of Conservation Voters is very glad to know that game meat can be donated to food banks. And we are an environmental organization, but we also care about environmental and public health. And at a time when we have, you know, school districts and here in the Capitol even warning signs against drinking water, because we know that lead in water has been a problem, particularly for children, the League would really hate to see a child inadvertently consume game meat that could further contribute to lead ingestion. So with that, I will leave the strong policy details and the impacts to our veterinarian friends and other people who have worked more with lead than I have. And I'll just add that when I worked for Senator Steiner Hayward in the 15th session, we were working on a bill around lead ammunition in wildlife and learned about the detrimental impacts of lead shot on birds, particularly California condors, and have learned since then even more that lead can have the similar impacts on humans. So in an effort to support public health for vulnerable Oregonians, particularly children, we urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Paige. Roger.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Roger Beyer, here representing the NRA. We have no position on the original House Bill 2525. Our members obviously would take advantage of it, we hope, if they have some extra game meat. Here to speak to the Dash A3 amendments, the NRA would be opposed to this amendment. We don't think it's proper to single out a legal product and say that if something has a potential of a lead ammunition, well, we know if game meat is killed with lead, there's probably that potential. But as a hunter and a fisherman myself, and most of our members are, I think the risk would be so minuscule because, as you've already heard, the people, it would be taken out. So we just think that it would be improper to hurt this bill by singling out a legal product and making it so that meat couldn't be used for donations. With that, happy to answer any questions.
And Roger, I assume you don't want this product to become illegal, right? Is that?
Well, Mr. Chair,
you're not proposing a subsequent amendment.
No, I am not proposing a subsequent amendment illegalizing lead ammunition.
Thank you. Any questions of the panel? Okay, thank you very much. Anyone else here who would like to testify on this bill?
Michael.
Oh, Senator Birchgear.
I can do it from here or there. Would it?
No, go ahead, from there.
Donation of wild game to the food banks, I think, is a fine idea, okay? My concern is food safety. The reason I have a little bit of background, there was a time in my life that I was actually going to start a company that dealt with meat production. And what we have to realize is that there's two ways to produce meat in the state of Oregon. There's the USDA inspected facilities, and then there's the ODA inspected facilities. The difference between the two facilities is that the ODA inspected facilities are like custom butchering, where you bring your animal in and it is okay. And the ODA inspected facilities is where you bring animals in that will be go to the public.
USDA,
yes, sorry. My concern is in the custom butchering side, there's no inspection of the animal when it's on the hoof, and there's no inspection of the meat when it's on the hook. Okay, the only inspections are the sanitation, refrigeration control, and stuff like that. In the USDA inspected facility, the animal inspected before it is slaughtered, and then the meat is inspected, and sanitation, and temperature, too. Those are very critical when you're going, because there's many things that can be missed, okay, when the animal is not inspected while it's still alive. And there's many things that can be missed when it's on the hook. That's my concern on this bill. And if we can figure out how to address that concern, I could support the bill. But until we have that conversation, I'm really concerned about, because when I look at food going from the food bank, I look at it going to the public. Even though they're not paying for it, we're still distributing food to the public. And I think that question needs to be addressed.
Mr. Chair.
Actually, before I call on you, I think you raised some good concerns, Senator. I wonder if somebody from ODA would like to come up and address that. We happen to have some smart people in the audience.
Good afternoon, Chair Dembro. For the record, Lauren Henderson. I'm the Assistant Director from the Department of Agriculture, and we have one smart person, and she happens to be on my left. I have with me Stephanie Page, our Program Director for our Food Safety Program. Maybe it would be, I think, Senator Barrett-Sugar, your description was very accurate in how you described the difference between the USDA inspections and us, but it might benefit the committee, just very briefly, Stephanie, to maybe to describe what we're doing today as far as training goes, and then what we would do if this bill were to pass with training videos and those things.
Thank you, Chair Dembro, members of the committee. For the record, Stephanie Page with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. Currently, our state veterinarian's office provides training to Oregon State Police and Fish and Wildlife through a video posted on a state training website. And that explains to folks how to inspect game meat for lesions and signs of disease, as the law currently describes. So in our discussions, our thought was that if this bill passes, we would provide that same video to the folks who, or the additional folks who become eligible to perform those inspections.
Great. And Stephanie, does your video address the question of lead at all?
Senator Dembro, it does not. I confirmed that with our state veterinarian.
Okay. Yes, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have the ability to inspect the animal while it is still alive?
Chair Dembro, Senator Redsugar, typically, I think you described our food safety inspection system very accurately. Typically, when we're in inspecting custom establishments, they may or may not be slaughtering on the day that we're in there or processing animals. So we would not have the ability to go in and inspect game meat while it was still whole.
Yes.
Would your inspectors have the ability to inspect for trichinosis when the game animal's on the hook?
Chair Dembro, Senator Barrett-Sugar, we would not have the ability to do that if it were a bear or another animal that could carry trichinella. We would discuss that in the training in terms of required cooking temperatures to destroy it, but we would not have the ability to inspect for that ourselves.
Thank you, Mr.
Vice Chair.
Thank you. This is a notable piece of legislation. It's good that we want to consider feeding people. My concern is not so much with lead, because we have hundreds of thousands of hunters that hunt every year and shoot game and eat game. My concern is with poaching. My concern is the fact that if an animal is taken, it can be taken right down and donated. And we have a very large poaching community out there, and particularly, and I'm going to get back to the fish, because I'm not certain that this does not cover fish. And someone could catch 5, 6, 7 salmon, take it right down and get it processed, and take it over, and not report that. And poaching, to me, is critical for our wildlife habitat, and it concerns me. And it's not so much the lead, it's what we can do to the outdoor, to the species, to our wildlife, including salmon, including bass. I'm everybody knows I'm always after the bass part of it, but the fact is that people do this, and I have very accurate documented records as far as fishing, on the number of fish that are caught and kept and can't be used. So my concern is how it will impact our fisheries and our wildlife.
Okay, thank you both very much. So I'm going to close our public hearing on House Bill 2525A, and I think we all have our homework to do, right? And we'll do some consultation about next steps for this bill. Okay. So actually, audience members, if you'll indulge me, before we reopen 2027, I have a couple of work sessions I want to quickly get through. I'm going to carry over our work session on House Bill 2722. So I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3051.
Work session.
Chair Denver, I move House Bill 3051 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson has moved House Bill 3051 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. This is the water measurement revolving fund. Any discussion of the motion? Any objection to the motion? Okay, seeing none. Motion carries. Was there a sponsor on this?
No, it's Water Resources.
Water Resources. Okay, I'll carry this bill. Close the work session on House Bill 3051. Open our work session on HGM 5A. Boy, is this a timely resolution. Memorial.
We need to do more. Chair Denver, I move HJM 5A to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson has moved HJM, House Joint Memorial 5A, to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. And audience members, this is a memorial that is urging Congress to continue to appropriate funds for the Hanford Nuclear Reservation cleanup, with specific focus on funding for expansion of existing groundwater treatment systems.
Should we add and new holes
and bridges
on the ground?
And bridges
and tunnels.
Right.
And tunnels.
Yeah.
Okay. Any discussion of the memorial? Is there any objection to our adopting the memorial? Seeing none. So ordered.
Okay.
Vice Chair Olson will carry. Close the work session on HGM 5A and reopen our public hearing on House Bill 2027A. So let's open up with Don Horton, Michelle Healy, and Neil Bryant, please. So whoever wants to start.
Oh, I'll start.
Okay, thank you.
So Senator Dembro and committee, thank you for allowing us to testify today. And can I approach the bench and give you this to take a look at while I'm speaking?
Yeah, just give it to Shelley.
What I passed out is a calendar.
Don, could you give us your name for the record?
I'm sorry, Don Horton, and I'm the executive director for the Bend Park and Recreation District. What I'm passing out is a calendar, and that calendar is produced once a year by a citizen in Bend who lives in the urban core of our community, and he lives in a 50-foot lot. So I think some of the wildlife pictures that you will see in that calendar is very similar to some of them that you saw a few minutes ago. And I think Bend is a very unique community because of the Deschutes River and how the Deschutes River flows through our community. It's still a wildlife corridor. And one photograph in there is a photograph of river floaters. So this person lives on a section of the river that is being floated by about 130,000 people a year. And still, that's the kind of wildlife that you're seeing in that area. One of the things, too, that I wanted to clarify a little bit is the Park and Recreation District has not had an application accepted by Oregon Parks and Recreation. We had submitted an application to Oregon Parks and Recreation for the purpose of seeing if we could get permission to build the bridge, but that application was not accepted because we were not the landowner. So that was just one piece of clarification that I wanted to make. Bend Park and Recreation is a special district, and we are governed by a board of directors who are elected by the citizens of the district. Through their leadership, I follow the plans and vision that has been provided to me. And one of these decade-long visions is the completion of the Deschutes River Trail. And when we say completion of the trail, we're talking about its completion from Tumalo all the way through Bend to Sun River. And the only segments of that section that aren't complete is there's a small segment right on Bend's northern boundary and a segment on Bend's southern boundary, which is what we're talking about here today. And then there's a couple in the urban core that are very short, like a block long. Trail development can be contentious because trails oftentimes bring people closer to residential neighborhoods. But trails also have benefits. They bring healthy recreation and transportation to communities, allowing people to of all ages to walk, commute, and to commune with nature. Trails function as a viable transportation corridor linking people to schools, employment, recreation, and to each other. In Bend and across Oregon, trails are an important part of city and county transportation plans. And in this case, this segment of the trail that we're talking about in the bridge is on both the city of Bend's transportation plan and Deschutes County's transportation plan. In Bend, the integrated trail system and local close-to-home recreation opportunities are primary drivers for attracting businesses and people who want to live in Bend. Bend Park and Recreation District is fully committed to the process put in place by statute. While the Oregon Scenic Waterway Program was approved by voters across Oregon, the OARs are administered by the Oregon State Parks. The No Bridge Rule is embedded in rules and not in legislation. We have worked closely with Oregon State Parks in the process they have prescribed and are committed to follow all rules of the program. We contend that the process is now and should continue to be regulatory and not legislative. This is not a loophole, as you may hear later, but the process that is set forth in statute. The project is a strongly held community desire. A tool in updating the district's comprehensive plan, a statistically valid survey conducted in March and April of this year by ETC Institute, indicate that the citizens of Bend favor the bridge 5-1. 72% of the respondents favor or strongly favor the bridge, while only 14% oppose or strongly oppose the bridge. In November 2012, the district took to voters a bond package that included four primary projects: land acquisition, the Pavilion Ice Rink, Bend Whitewater Park, and the completion of the Deschutes River Trail. The bond projects were widely publicized by a campaign committee, and information material was mailed to every resident in Bend. The completion of the Deschutes River Trail was the flagship project of the bond program. As the largest landowner of riverfront property in Bend, we dedicate many resources to the preservation and rehabilitation of riverfront habitat, including working with the Upper Deschutes Watershed Council to rehabilitate riparian areas and establish wetlands that did not exist before. We rebuilt the banks vegetation at First Street Rapids, Farewell Bend, River Bend Parks, created Fist Passage along at the old Colorado Dam, and through the bond program purchased over 2 miles of riverfront property now known as the Riley Ranch Nature Reserve. Given the significance of this project to our community, I want to thank you for your time and thoughtful consideration. And one thing that I will leave you with is that the area that we're looking at locating the bridge, which will be talked about in more detail here in a minute, is on the U.S. Forest Service property. So we're not talking about it being on private property, and we've always felt that a public facility ought to be on public property. And one side of where the bridge will be located is an off-leash dog area that is 640 acres in size and has more people and off-leash dogs than any other dog park that we have in our community. So just to kind of bring a little bit of perspective about the environment in which that we're talking about, even though it is in the Oregon Scenic Waterway Program, it is still a large off-leash area. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Horton. Ms. Healy?
Good afternoon, Chair Dembro and members of the committee. I'm Michelle Healy. I'm the Planning and Park Services Director for the Bend Park and Recreation District, and appreciate your time so we can give you a little bit of information about why we oppose this bill. Don gave you a general sense, and we've provided some additional pictures and maps for you as we go through this information. As Don mentioned, this bill would prohibit the construction of a bridge that would help complete the Deschutes River Trail running all the way through Bend on the south side of town. This has been a long-standing community vision for decades. This bridge and the trail connectivity has been included in multiple community plans and has been discussed in many public venues. Most recently, as Don mentioned, it was approved in a bond measure in 2012 by the voters of the Park District. Since the passage of the bond measure in 2014, the district convened a 22-member citizen advisory committee. Their role was to identify and evaluate different bridge alternatives on the south side of town. After months of work, and they actually created the 23 criteria that they used to evaluate the bridges as well, they came to a recommendation for a trail and bridge location. And within your packet is a map showing the recommended bridge location. It's bridge location 3, and the trail alignment is 3C. As Don mentioned, the bridge is located on both sides of the river on federal land, and the trail alignment passes on private property on an alignment that was suggested by the property owner during the CAC process. You may have been hearing some concerns about the impact of the project on wildlife and habitat. It is true, as you know, it's in the state scenic waterway. It's also in the federal scenic, wild and scenic river corridor, which would subject it to quite an extensive environmental review, including a NEPA analysis. And that those analyses would allow us to better understand what impacts there may be from this project and if there are mitigations possible. We haven't been able to do that yet to really understand those impacts. It is also in the elk and mule deer migration route for the winter range, which surrounds Bend, even on the east side of the river. As Don mentioned, one thing that really hasn't been talked about or evaluated is the off-leash dog park that's managed by the Forest Service on the other side of the river, where this bridge would connect to the Deschutes River Trail. Another thing that's been brought up is the Oregon spotted frog. Per the U.S. Department of Fish and Wildlife, there is not critical habitat where this bridge is located. The district overall is definitely committed to the environment. We have experience building bridges and working with the required regulatory environmental regulations. Most recently, we were given a permit by the Oregon State Parks for another bridge on the north side of the town. This bridge is also a connection for the Deschutes River Trail, linking the trail to Tumalo on the north, but it also connects to the Riley Ranch Nature Reserve that Don mentioned. That's a 184-acre piece of property that the district purchased for parkland, which was originally slated for urban development. Through our adopted management plan of the site, we are actually prohibiting dogs and bikes in large groups from that site. So we actually have more restrictive rules up at that end of the Deschutes River Trail. And those were done because of the nature of the site, and we did an extensive evaluation of that area. So from a broader environmental perspective, I'll just leave you with that this bridge would provide thousands of existing citizens an alternative way to get to the National Forest, and in some cases would alleviate a 12-mile round-trip drive to access the forest, cutting down congestion on our roads, as well as the limited parking that's in the National Forest. So we thank you for your consideration and your time today, and we would look forward to answering questions.
Thank you very much.
Could you hand that to Shelley? Thank you.
Chair Bryan, Senator.
I've become a clerk.
Yes. My name is Neil Bryan. It's a pleasure to be back here. I am an attorney in Bend. I've practiced law there for 44 years, and for the last 15 years, I've represented the Parks District. And most of you know me, but I used to sit in that chair for the Senate Judiciary for 6 years, which I had the privilege of chairing, and I was from District 27. So a week ago, Tuesday night, I tried to explain to the board what in the heck a gut and stuff was, because the reason there was no opposition in the House was the district wasn't aware of what had happened, and no one gave a phone call to either the city of Bend or to the Parks District, and so there was no testimony in opposition to the amendment. And then suddenly it goes to the floor, and we decided, well, if it gets a hearing here, we'll come and present our side of the story, and that's why we're here. So don't take the fact that it passed unanimously on the House side that there isn't good reason to have this bill die or have it amended. My letter basically explains about the district and how sensitive they are about purchasing land. In my 15 years, we've never filed a condemnation, and we've bought a lot of land for parks and trails and other things. Never once have we filed a condemnation. So if someone's painting the idea that we are there with a big club, and if you don't agree with us, we're going to condemn, that has not been the practice of the Bend Parks District. They're very sensitive to that. And the other part about the Forest Service, this has been the one you see on the diagram, and it's on the back page, too, of my letter. The 3C trail and the three option of where the bridge would go, the reason that the Parks District looked at other options and created a stir among subdivisions on the west side of the river was the Forest Service said, before we can approve a bridge on our property, you have to convince us there isn't another good option. And so they explored four other options for the bridge, most of them on private property. Most of it would be on trails on private property, and there was objection to that. So by looking at what's the preferred alternative here, it takes it away from the subdivisions on the west side that opposed it. And the landowner that this runs through, as Michelle said, this was his idea of where the trail should go. We have a letter of intent with him that explains this, and that's the only private property that would be crossed in that regard. In fact, the Parks District worked with him because he sold the other 78 acres here to a developer, and in the city plan there was a path that was going to go through it. And the developer didn't want that, and the people on the other side of the river didn't want that. So the Parks District and the city gave up that trail alignment and moved to this one in part to satisfy those concerns. As mentioned, there'll be a NEPA requirement, which takes time and a lot of public input. And so this is not going to be a quick process anyway. The board itself, five members, very environmentally conscious, and are trying to accomplish in a way that matches the community the extension of this trail. And the bridge is important because it connects to the Sun River Trail. You'll see it listed there. On the other side, the U.S. Forest Service land has a lot of activity already. It's not pristine, and there'll probably be some mitigation requirements in order to do this, which is part of the NEPA process. So we encourage you not to pass this bill as it's presently written.
Okay, thank you. So in terms of the timeline that you envision, if this bill were not to pass, and in an ideal world, the NEPA were to proceed precipitously, you know, et cetera, what kind of timeline are we looking at?
I'll try. Chair Dembro, this is a very complex project, even without the current legislation, as you might imagine, and I think where you're going with the question. I think what we've talked with citizens that are interested, we're talking years, most likely, just even to understand the NEPA process with the Forest Service, assuming they would allow us to do that, and then to go through that as well as just to evaluate the site in general. We haven't even been able to go down there to understand exactly what the site might look like. So we're talking years, many years.
Okay. Senator Bircher, then Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The NEPA process, have you have a letter of intent from the Forest Service, and if so, are they going to make you pay for the NEPA?
We don't have a letter of intent with the Forest Service. We do with the landowner where the trail would go. And the Forest Service will probably require parks to pay for the NEPA because, one, they're saying they don't have the money, and it's our project, so they're going to require Ben Parks to pay for it.
Yeah, we have had conversations with the Forest Service about NEPA just in general, and they can either do it in-house or we can contract to have it done, but either way, we'd have to pay for it.
Follow up. If this is a contentious issue, in my experience with NEPA's and Forest Service, unfortunately, you know, it can be contested in court, and you're going to probably have to pay for all that too. So you got a long, this could be a long road.
Yeah. Senator Roblin.
So as I understand it now a little better, Parks still has control over whether you can build a bridge as well, not just the NEPA process. They haven't gone through that process. They haven't been denied. It just hasn't happened yet. And that is part of their criteria. This takes that out of their hands because it says you can't do it.
You mean state parks?
State parks.
Right.
State parks.
Yeah.
But from what I'm hearing, they have a process, and you're going to have to go through that to get permission to do this as well. Is that true?
That's correct. So in general, the way that process works, and Chris Havel with State Parks is here tonight, so if you want to get more information from him, I'm sure he'd be willing to share it. But with a no bridge rule, State Parks would automatically deny the application. And how the application process works and how it was set up in statute is that if a landowner applies for a project, whether it's a bridge or any other project within the Oregon Scenic Waterway, that project is reviewed by State Parks, and they have the right to accept or deny the project. If the project is denied, it starts a clock ticking for 1 year. And during that year, it allows State Parks to work with the landowner to improve the project where it's more compatible with the environment that it's in, or State Parks can buy the property from them if they think it's significant enough to preserve. After the year time period is over with, the landowner, whether it's public or private, is able to move forward with their project. And so that's the way the state statute worked. And my understanding of it is that when it went into law, that was the direction of the legislature, is that because of private property rights, they didn't want the Oregon Scenic Waterway program that affects 22 rivers across the state to be able to affect private property rights to that extent.
So its intent is to slow things down.
I think it's intended like a timeout. You know, let's take a timeout on this project, take another look at it. Is there anything that we can do to make it more compatible? And State Parks would work with the applicant to help do that.
Thanks, Senator.
And this bill would only affect this small section in Bend. It would not affect the whole process. So it's basically, I don't know, we call it cherry picking. It's taking out one section, not affecting the rest of it. So in other places, they could go through the process and do it, possibly. Depends on what comes out.
Yeah, you know, it's not a bill that improves the overall Oregon Scenic Waterway program because it's specific only to one site. And it goes from 1 mile inside the city's UGB through upwater, upstream, to the end of where the Oregon Scenic Waterway ends. So it's more than within Bend. It extends up into the National Forest Service and through Sun River as well.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
We have a lot of people to hear from and look forward to hearing from them. And we'll start with Chris Cassard, Ted Schoenborn, and Judy Clinton, please. Oh, geez, I'm sorry. Hey, actually, can I ask you all to sit down again?
Yeah.
Sure. You can sit in the front row. You don't have to go all the way back.
Yeah, I want to have some of the advocates come up first, and then we'll have try to alternate a little bit. Judy Clinton, Kristen Phillips, and Michael Isley, please.
You just made her go sit down.
Did I? Yeah, sorry.
Judy, you got to go back.
I'm not going back. I'm sorry.
No, don't. There you go.
Good for you.
Stand your ground.
And Judy, you get to go first, even.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chairman and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this afternoon. I'm Judy Clinton, a resident of Bend. I've been a longtime advocate for the Deschutes River, working with the city of Bend to codify river protections under the water overlay zone and the upland areas of special interest. I'm going to add some comments to my testimony simply because of what I've heard. The environmental groups that I've spoken with over this period of maybe 6 months, and I will list them, a Coalition for the Deschutes, Central Oregon Land Watch, Oregon Natural Desert Association, Oregon Wild, immediately saw the threat posed by either opening the rules or to allow a bridge or the loophole that Don mentioned in an OAR, and supported this bill, 2027A, because the loophole needed to be fixed. Now I'm going to go and read Oregon Wild letter, which I will hobble over there. Okay, thank you. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I will only read a section of it. Oregon Wild has 20,000 supporters and members who care about wildlife, rivers, wilderness, and forests. Members support this organization because of those principles. In 2016, their staff started charting their strategic vision for the next 4 years. Part of that vision was looking at critical corridors, Oregon's forests and waters. The Oregon Scenic Waterways falls into that vision, and this is why Oregon Wild is supporting Bill 2027A. Oregon Wild is pleased to stand with a coalition of stakeholders expressing opposition or significant concern to the potential opening of the rules and the related bridge. It is telling that there is a strong alignment between private property rights interests, scenic interests, recreationists, wildlife advocates, and even more on an issue like this. Because Oregon Parks and Rec just recently, hot off the press, declined to open the waterway rules, that still leaves this loophole. And the loophole, as Don mentioned, is that after 12 months, he explained the whole process. But that process is still available to Bend Parks and Rec because they are not landowners. They have to condemn the land that they need for their bridge. So by passing this bill, you will close that loophole. Also, I'd like to point out that there's been a bit of a bait and switch that's happened because the landowners that I've spoken with were basically threatened with condemnation as a part of trying to get this Bend River Trail. Also, there are 19 miles of the Deschutes River Trail that already exists. There's only this one section that doesn't. And thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much.
If you have questions, I can answer them.
Okay, we'll hear from all three of you first. Welcome, Kristen.
Thank you. Excuse me. Good afternoon, Chair Dembro and members of the committee. I am Kristen Phillips, a Bachelor View Road homeowner of nearly 4 acres on the Deschutes River. As a CASA and a court-appointed special advocate, whose job it is to be the voice of those of our most vulnerable children in the foster care system, I know how important it is to build and retain trust. Bend Park and Rec does not, and Mr. Bryant spoke incorrectly, as you will hear. I'm here today to speak on behalf of my neighbors who've been threatened, as my husband and I have been, by Bend Parks and Rec's with condemnation and eminent domain. My neighbors have submitted their written testimony. I will now quote parts from their statements which specifically address this issue. Dr. Ambrose Sue says, we have owned land along the Deschutes River since 1999. Our home sits high above the river corridor, allowing the river and bank to stay as natural as possible. When I attempted to be on a public committee regarding the bridge project, I was denied for supposedly being biased. Steve Jorgensen, planning manager for BPRD, said, what? You don't want 30,000 people walking on your land. No one from Bend Park and Rec has directly asked to sit down with me or talk to me about the project and my concerns. Instead, they just talk at board meetings about condemnation if it comes to that. One of its current board members, Craig Chenoweth, recently confirmed with me by phone that Bend Parks had given its director, Don Horton, authorization to use condemnation if needed to secure the land it needed for the bridge. Dr. Delight Stone says, when we retired, we had the good fortune to be able to afford our build our dream home on 10 acres of the upper section of the Deschutes River. Our home is primarily constructed of recycled materials, and it is off the grid. We consciously landscape our land located on both sides of the river, keeping and planting only native plant material. We spend quite a bit each year protecting the area from invasive species, and we've been good stewards of the property. Don Horton came to our property and told us he wants to put a bridge across our land from east to west, west to east. Mr. Horton told us that his mission, in addition to the bridge, is to put an extension trail on our property on the east side of the river. My husband and I were told at the Drake Park Festival on July 4th, 2014, by Steve Jorgensen, planning manager for Bend Parks, that he would, quote, just take the land when we told him that homeowners like ourselves were not in favor of this bridge project. He went on to say, quote, we've done it before, we'll do it again, end quote. I actually wrote this conversation down when I went home on the 4th of July, as it was so upsetting to me at the time. Who knew that I'd ever have to make this part of a submission of testimony in front of you state legislators? And an email dated June 10th, 2015, in which Don Horton was CC'd, Steve Jorgensen says, quote, with Bend Park and Rec's power of eminent domain, we have the option of acquisition from unwilling property owners, so securing a trail route to the bridge should not be an issue either way, end quote. Bend Park and Rec's use of condemnation or eminent domain as a tactic to threaten and intimidate Oregon landowners should be unacceptable in this state. They are good at using innuendo and the press to insult quote-unquote rich people who live on the river. How ironic that good land stewardship, ownership of property, and fiscal responsibility get summed up as rich people being greedy. Bend Parks should not be allowed to bully Oregonians and take their well-earned property at will. It is an agency in dire need of check and balances, and that is your job today. Please send them a strong and undeniable message by the passage of House Bill 2027A. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Kristen. Mr. Eisen.
Chairman Dembro and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Michael Isley. I live in Deschutes County in Riverbend Estates, which is immediately adjacent to Deschutes River and in the county, but right on the border, the south border, below the urban growth boundary of Bend. And our community is also at the immediately adjacent to the proposed location of the bridge. Because of that, I was invited to be a part of the Upper Deschutes Advisory Group that Representative Wisnett already spoke about, and the report that was issued to the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department earlier this month, and which the director spoke about today in her press release. So I'm here to, you know, a lot of times this discussion sounds like a local dispute. And Bend Parks would like you to think it's just the people who live on the river versus the good of the community. That's the way they characterize it. Well, that's not true. I'm in favor of this bill because it's good for Oregon. It's good for the whole state. Why is that? The rules that are in place for the Upper Deschutes River as a portion of the state Wild and Scenic River program, the ones today were created 21 years ago. They were created by a committee that included local and state representatives. It included the National Forest Service, and it included local residents. And of the many rules, it includes many rules, but why are the rules in place? Well, if you read the rules, I didn't bring a copy, but I know there's some copies in the audience. Those rules state that the biggest values to protect are to protect the wildlife and to protect the quality of recreation in the wild and scenic river. And here we are 21 years later, and the recreation economy in Central Oregon is booming. Not because we built more bridges, not because we developed the river, but because the rules have served a great purpose to protect the wildlife and the quality of recreation. So jobs, people are visiting. They're taking vacations there. People from all over Oregon are coming to Central Oregon. Development of the river will destroy what's unique and beautiful and what the intent of protecting wild and scenic rivers in our state. And that's what the UDAG, our committee report to the state, basically says, that it's working, but there's been this loophole in the rules, which if you wait a year, maybe the rules apply to you, maybe they don't. To paraphrase the Ben Parks testimony today, it's just a rule. It's not in the regulation. It's not in the legislation. That's why this bill is so critical to Oregon. It puts in the legislation the teeth, the enforcement that is not in the rules. But the rules have worked for 21 years. Let's keep them working for the good of the economy and the good of the river and the good of the wildlife and the good of the recreation for another 21, maybe more. The great news here is you will do wonders for the Oregon economy, and it doesn't cost the taxpayers 1 cent. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Michael. Any questions of this panel? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, now let's have Chris Cassard, Ted Schoenborn, and Bruce Ronning, please. Want to start, Chris?
Chairman Brow and Senate Committee of Senators. My name is Chris Cassard. I'm a resident of Bend and a businessman in Bend. I'm here to speak strongly in opposition to House Bill 2027A. I want to mention also that I volunteer time on the Deschutes County Bike Pedestrian Advisory Committee. Our committee advises the county commissioners on multimodal transportation issues, including trail issues such as this one. I want to be clear that I am not speaking on behalf of our BPAC. Our report goes to the county commission as it has. I'm speaking as a private citizen. I also want to say that as it happens, I live along the Deschutes River Trail, not in the area that's in contention right now. I actually live on the north side of town in an area that was probably the last area under contention in terms of bridge building. I have provided extensive testimony in writing. I felt it was important enough that I take time to come speak to you today and answer any questions that you may have. For my testimony, I want to get into just three simple, quick points. One point is, and it's been mentioned by Ben Parks and Rec before me, this has been a substantial, long-term, transparent process. It's not brand new. It should be a surprise to no one that this is a proposal. The idea of a fully connected trail system all the way from Tumalo to Sun River has been the dream of the community for a long time. It's developed over quite a number of years with ample opportunities for public input, for surveys taken, for comments to be provided. It's been known for an exceptional period of time, and it's part of the transportation plans of Deschutes County, of City of Bend, and Bend Parks and Rec. I don't know whether the people proposing this bill took the opportunity to participate in that or not. I have no way of knowing that. But I know that the opportunity for making themselves heard has absolutely been there. So that's point number one. It's been transparent. It's well known. Point number two, and this also has been mentioned by Ben Parks and Rec, it is the strong majority opinion of the community and of Central Oregon to have a fully connected trail system, including the bridge. There have been surveys that have established that, but I think the data point that speaks most loudly to me is that the vote that was taken on the bond measure some years ago, and that also was mentioned by Ben Parks and Rec, that bond measure was an endorsement of the plans of Ben Parks and Rec, which included the connected trail, which included building a bridge. So you have a situation where, first of all, there's transparency in the community. And secondly, the community has voted, has not only provided their views, but have further voted to provide their pocketbooks in order to support the fully connected trail system. I consider that an extremely strong endorsement of making the connection in place, or completing the connection. The third point that I want to make addresses the environmental issues. I'm a longtime frequent user of our environmental amenities here in Oregon. I'm frequently in the wilderness areas myself. I am greatly concerned with the environment. I think it is important for the committee to keep in mind as you consider this bill, though, that the issues of environmental protection included here need to be taken with bearing in mind the changes that are happening to this area of the river anyway. The bridge is in a protected area of the river, but it's adjacent to the urban growth boundary of Bend. Bend is growing rapidly. Whether the committee and whether those of us testifying like it or not, that section of Bend is changing dramatically. There already is a 78-unit development being proposed for one side of the river, and we've heard just recently about the dog park that's on the other side of the river. The reality is that we will still have this crown jewel river no matter what, but it also will change in the form of having housing all around it. It will become an urban river, just like the Deschutes is an urban river in other parts, including the part in which I live. So three points. It's been a transparent process. It's been voted on, and it's been preferred by the vast majority of people in the region. And third, I give full credence to the environmental issues. As you've heard before, those are all still being evaluated. In fact, all elements of continuing with the trail are still being evaluated. I want to urge the committee to let this bill die in committee. In my view, it represents a premature end to the public debate, and I think that came up in your comments or your questions earlier, Senator Roblin. There is a continuing process going, which would have the carpet pulled out of it by passing a bill like this. I think that it tends to favor a small group of landowners at the expense of an entire region of our state. Most importantly, the continuation of the bill would countermand the vote of the people that favor the trail and the bridge. In summary, it's bad public policy that you have two trail systems coming together that would connect except for one little dividing line, and it's bad political process. You heard how it was done, how a gut and stuff routine was used in order to get it through the House without any votes. Thank you very much for letting me testify. I'd be happy to answer any questions after the other folks.
Thank you.
Chair Dembro and members of the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, I'm Ted Schoenborn, Chair of the Bend Park and Recreation Board of Directors. I've had the pleasure to serve on this board since 2003. In this time, the district has developed miles of trails used for recreation and transportation in Bend. The Deschutes River Trail is an amazing example of how public access can transform the appreciation for a waterway. From the not-so-distant past when the Deschutes River was a logging corridor to now when 130,000 people river recreate each summer, the river is a hub of our community. HB 2027A would mean the end of the Deschutes River Trail extended, and I am here to ask you to oppose it. This special interest legislation doesn't belong in Salem. It belongs in the public processes in Bend. The swift introduction and passage in the House was a surprise and should not preempt our public processes that are underway. The other members of our board and I feel strongly about the need for this public process and the discussion about the possible benefits and impact that a footbridge would have on the south boundary of Bend. We have not authorized Don Horton or any other individual to condemn land, and I have been on the board now for 14 years, and it has never, we have never done that. If a staffer is saying that, well, we could condemn it, he is describing the law, not our policy. And we have always worked with landowners to be very careful about respecting their property rights and making sure that the community interests are served. The statewide comprehensive outdoor recreation plan, SCORP data, shows softer surface trails are the highest priority that we have statewide for outdoor recreation. As a current member of the SCORP committee, we should all work together to be responsive to the public request for trails. Bend Park and Recreation District has made its trail system a priority, and as recently as a month ago, it was reiterated again. The statistically valid survey from residents across Bend concluded that 72% of the residents support a bridge and a trail. This includes a broad section of the community, north to south, east to west. And before the operation to a footbridge became a sort of a NIMBY issue, we sent out a questionnaire in 2014 to neighbors on both sides of the river. And in that questionnaire, which is not statistically significant, but received many hundreds of responses, 88% of the residents indicated that they would use a trail, such as we're proposing, such as we're discussing, if a bridge were built. Trails are not meant to be a treadmill. Exercise on a trail has to go somewhere. They have to be connected. They have to serve the connectivity. Transportation difficulties are significant in Bend right now. Multimodal issues, multimodal needs for broadening the ability to move from one point or to another in town and to get to the National Forest Trails from the east side of town are a really significant issue. And anything we can do to keep automobiles off the streets is going to help that substantially. In 2012, voters approved the bond measure, as everyone has described already, that included the Deschutes River Trail with a connection from Sun River to Tumalo State Park. The bond measure information specifically talked about a footbridge and trail development to connect both sides of the Deschutes River and the U.S. Forest Service trails. I brought copies of that information that was sent to every household in the district. Our community should have a discussion about the best way to meet the community-wide interest with trail access and connections. Thank you, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Ted. Bruce.
Chair Dumbrow and honorable committee members, my name is Bruce Ronning. I live at 63960 Sunset Drive, Bend 97703, which is in Representative Gene Wisnett's House District 53. And I come before you in opposition to Representative Wisnett's HB 2027A. 2027A. So as an aside, I was one of the guides that took Jody and Gene Wisnett on the Upper Deschutes River back in the early 90s. When I was at that time the outdoor programs manager at the Bend Park and Recreation District. I recall it as a very amiable and enjoyable experience, but I have to tell you on this issue, Mr. Wisnett and I disagree. My residence is approximately 1/2 mile walking distance from Tumalo State Park and the Deschutes River Trail that runs through it. And because of that proximity, I'm able to enjoy the trail and the river any day of the week and at any time of the year. With the completion of the river trail improvements currently undertaken by the Oregon Park and Recreation Department and the Bend Metro Park and Recreation District, I will soon be able to walk along the Deschutes River Trail from my home to downtown Bend and beyond. Unfortunately, residents of the South UGB area do not have the same type of close-to-home trail access. The Bend Accessway Plan, as incorporated into the Bend Transportation System Plan in 2006, calls for creating the same convenient connections to the river and the Forest Service trails for Southern Bend residents that those of us to the north enjoy. The South UGB Bridge and Trail Crossing is an integral element of that vision. The vision for a continuous 30-mile-long Deschutes River Trail from Tumalo State Park to Sun River has been included in numerous local planning efforts that I described in written testimony submitted to the hearing record. This type of close-to-home access and regional trail connectivity is called for in both the 2011-17 statewide comprehensive outdoor recreation plan and in the recently completed 2016-2025 Oregon statewide recreation trails plan. I have served for 14 years on the Oregon Park and Recreation District grant advisory committees, both for recreation trails, which is known as RTP, and for the local government grant. During that time, I've reviewed numerous riverfront trail proposals across the state that include pedestrian bicycle crossings, like the proposed South UGB Trail Bridge. Many of these grant proposals were approved and the facilities are now in place. This includes the South Canyon Bridge and trail connections that were supported with a 2005 OPRD local government grant and that lie in the Deschutes River Canyon 2 miles downstream of the proposed South UGB Bridge. If HB 2027A is passed as currently written, it will benefit the special interests of a few well-heeled riverfront property owners to the detriment of thousands of South Bend residents and trail users. An extensive local planning effort for the proposed trail bridge has occurred over many years and continues today. The Bend community at large strongly supports the bridge proposal as exhibited in the Bend, as is exhibited in the Bend Metro Park and Recreation District strategically valid comprehensive plan survey that was done just in March and April of this year. The Bulletin reported this morning that Senator Tim Knope has now offered a compromise solution that can work, providing the Deschutes National Forest will support it. If the National Forest should proceed with the bridge proposal, it will require an extensive NEPA analysis and will also face local land use planning approval, both processes of which will involve the opportunity for lengthy and extensive public input and comment. HB 2027A is unjustified, it's ill-timed, it's special interest legislation. Absent Senator Knope's proposed amendment, HB 2027 should not go any further than this committee. I urge the committee to kill HB 2027A as it now is configured in lieu of a practical solution to the much demanded South UGB river crossing and trail connections. Thank you. And if I might take just one more minute, Senator, or
30 seconds.
Oh, 30 seconds. As I said, I was at the Bend Park and Recreation District for 25 years, for the first 11 as an outdoor program person, and then at the final 12 as the planning manager and then director of planning and development, the position that Michelle holds now. I hired Steve Jorgensen. I supervised him for 7 years. I find it astounding that he's been accused of saying what he's been accused of saying, and if he did, I would expect it was done in a sarcastic manner. Steve is, as Ted has pointed out, Steve is not in the position of the district to threaten condemnation of anybody's property. And in my 25 years of the Park and Recreation District, that was never the will of any park board, including the current one. So with that, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen. So we have three more panels left. We'll keep going until we hear from you. But some of us may have to take off.
10 minutes, yeah.
So, but I'm here. So our next panel is going to be Doug White, Craig Lindberg, and Jim Clinton, please. Okay, Mr. White.
Good afternoon, Chair Dembro and members of the committee. My name is Doug White. My wife and I live at 6072 River Bend Drive in Bend, Oregon. Actually, we're not in the city of Bend. We are just directly south of the proposed location of the bridge. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2227A, and you've heard a lot of things. I'm not going to reiterate what's been heard. I think I'll mention a few things that haven't been mentioned that I think are critical. One thing, the folks in River Bend Drive and ourselves and Ms. Hawker, who owns the 7 acres just directly south of the urban growth boundary city limits, feel that we have zero representation by local government, and I'll explain why. First of all, we're in Deschutes County. These projects that they're talking about, whether it's downriver or on federal land, is in Deschutes County National Forest or the city of Bend. So because of that, irrespective of the fact that any bridge built would have the transportation, parking, use of the roads would be totally within Deschutes County, Deschutes County has not decided to weigh in on this because the projects are either in the city or in the Deschutes National Forest, in spite of the fact that based on case law dealing with an early case dealing with the DIAC decision, counties can weigh in on issues even though they're out their jurisdiction if they show a nexus of impact. So there is a nexus of impact from this location in our neighborhood that's in the county. We're not in the city of Bend, so we really can't go to the city of Bend. Deschutes National Forest, yes, they'll require a special use permit, but that's their process. We don't have representation on the Deschutes National Forest. But because of the location of the project and the location of this part of the county, we have no say on it. A couple things I have to take issue with that was mentioned. You've heard the talk about this being in the works for a long time, being in the plans for a long time. Well, I would say, first of all, it is not in the county's TSP that I'm aware of because it's not in the county's jurisdiction. And I testified asking when they updated the transportation system plan if they could include this and make note that it's in a wild and scenic river. It's outside the city limits. They should at least identify it as an issue or at least a conflict. They didn't do that. They decided to keep the TSP silent in the county. The city's TSP has a trail, which is not prohibited. They don't have a bridge in the city. It's drawn on the city map outside the city into the county with a denotation saying destination across the river. I testified in front of Deschutes County saying, why would you let that happen, have another jurisdiction put a designation in the county that's basically illegal? It violates the state law and federal law. The other thing I'd want to say, so there is it, and the city's plan actually was remanded by the Department of Land Conservation and Development when it was first submitted. It was remanded by Mr. Bob Courtright as a department remanded their periodic review. I would say, though, that they responded to that remand with a policy to visit this issue on a case-by-case basis and address the river, wetlands, and other habitat. Unfortunately, it's extremely vague, and I think if Mr. Courtright would have saw that remand response, he would have said, please clarify what you're talking about. Unfortunately, there's a rule at the department that if the department doesn't issue a notice of a submittal on a remand, it gets deemed acknowledged regardless of what's in it. This was lost on the shelf. They found it when I called them and said, have you guys taken action on this TSP? No. Oops, we have to prove it because we never issued notice. So we have some things in the books, but when they were presented to the state, they were flat out rejected because they violated Scenic Waterway Act, Federal Wild Scenic River, comprehensive plans. So I have to take issue with that. I can't help but comment on the fact that the bridge and the people that are impacted are outside the district. We are not represented by the Parks District. We did not get a chance to vote on the measure. Yes, it mentions the connection of the DRT. It's a little vague about exactly where the bridge is going to be, but the bond measure, I'd issue that it isn't that clear. What? Yeah, it talks about connecting Tumalo to Sun River. I can understand that. But the project's outside the district. So they're spending money on land that's outside the district and no representation from the folks. We didn't get a vote in it. We don't have a say in this matter because we're in the county.
Okay, if you could wrap up, Mr. White.
Pardon?
If you could wrap up.
Yes, I will. Thank you. I appreciate it. I've invited Mr. Jorgensen to the property. I've toured with him. To say he hasn't been down there, that's not true. I invited him. I spent the day with him. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Yes, good afternoon, Chair Dimbrough and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak here. My name is Craig Lindberg. I am a resident of Bend. I'm here speaking in my private capacity as a private citizen. However, in my day job, I'm a forestry professor who specializes in outdoor recreation and survey research. You've heard Bruce and Ted and other references to the statewide survey, statewide comprehensive outdoor recreation plans. I conducted all those surveys for state parks over the past decade. So I have that perspective, and I want to disagree very strongly with respect to the survey work that Bend Parks and Rec has done and how we should interpret that. They reference statistically valid. We can get into a discussion about survey research and statistics, but basically that phrase is meaningless. It's something that consultants say and agencies say. What's really important here is whether those results are substantively valid, whether they are a decent basis for policy decisions, and I completely disagree. I do not believe that they have a decent foundation for policy decisions. I would really encourage you to not consider the results that you've been hearing as something that really reflects public opinion. I also strongly disagree with the statement about this being a special interest legislation. I do not live in the area where the bridge is. I live across town. Many other residents have been involved in this process. I participated in the Upper Deschutes Advisory Group. There were many, many comments in that process, as well as the prior state parks process with respect to the bridge. And very many people in the community are opposed to the bridge, and not just the people that live in the area. I also note that environmental groups like Oregon Wild and Central Oregon Land Watch are opposed. They also don't live in the area, of course. And the most relevant statewide research that I've seen that we conducted was asked about state scenic waterways. It is very clear that the Oregonians as a whole prioritize conservation and wildlife habitat over high-use recreation. So if you look at the good survey research that is done, I think they give you a very different picture than what you've heard from Bend Parks and Rec. As I mentioned, I was a participant in the UDAG process that recently completed, that process that led to today's announcement in terms of not reopening the rules. We went through several months of meetings. That whole process, as Chris Halva was at pains to clarify, was only about the last mile of the state scenic waterway, which is inside city limits. So I'll leave it to Chris and others to correct me if I'm wrong there. But Bend Parks and Rec has talked about option three, which goes into national forest land. We just had multiple meetings and a huge process to look at a bridge within the city limits, which would involve condemnation of private property. Now, Parks and Rec apparently has changed directions in the last couple weeks on that, but there's nothing to stop them from moving it back into the city limits, except for HB 2027. So I respectfully request that you endorse and pass HB 2027, because that's the only thing that will actually give teeth to the administrative rules that currently exist for state scenic waterways. And if I may just do one last statement here. Bend Parks and Rec talked about the bond being essentially a mandate for this bridge. Here's their bond summary. There's no mention of the bridge at all in here. I just do not see how they can justify this bridge on the basis of people passing the bond. People pass the bond for several other reasons, including, as we heard, this general idea that trails are good. I like trails. Trails are good. This is a mom and apple pie type of thing. But Bend Parks and Rec has not been transparent with the public about the context and all the other important issues that are relevant in this bond context. And I encourage the committee to keep that in mind, that this is not just about trail connectivity, which, by the way, already exists in that area. It's about all these other aspects that are wrapped up in a state scenic waterway and the important characteristics of that waterway. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you, Ms. Lindberg. Mayor Clinton, welcome.
Thank you. Chair Dimbrough and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. just a few months ago, until a
Give
few
us
months
your
ago.
Name for the record.
Oh, Jim Clinton. So until just a few months ago, I was the mayor of the city of Bend, and I spent 12 years on the Bend City Council, where I took a special interest in the Deschutes River. It's like the jewel in the crown that is Bend, and the city enacted the waterway overlay zone to provide permanent protection to certain kinds of adverse development along the entire corridor and on the rim rocks. As we heard from Representative Wisnett, and the Oregon Scenic Waterways were established in 1970. voter initiative and referendum expanded by another referendum, followed by legislation and careful development of administrative rules on behalf of the entire state. In Bend's only designated segment on the Deschutes River, bridges are banned by a longstanding OAR. However, this bridge ban rule has been under concerted assault by the Bend Parks and Rec District. This assault has included numerous threats of condemnation of private property for a recreation facility, setting a dangerous precedent. As you all know, and I'm sure agree with, we have no history in Oregon of condemning land for recreation facilities. However, that's exactly the threat they have been making. It was actually quite difficult to sit and listen to the testimony from the representatives of the Park District because numerous things that they stated were simply untrue. For example, this passage of a bond issue was in no way an endorsement of this bridge. Secondly, this proposed bridge is not on the city's transportation system plan, and even in any case, it is a recreation facility. It's not part of any kind of transportation system. So no implication should be drawn that the city in any way endorses this bridge, and in fact, it is incompatible with the waterway overlay zone. Also, they didn't mention that just a mile downstream from this segment, there already is a trail bridge across the river. So really what we're talking about here is convenience in this highly sensitive and protected area for people to use a bridge just to get across the river when they apparently are unable to go down to this 1 mile to get on the existing bridge. So this unique and valuable natural area needs and deserves continued and permanent state protection. So that's what HB 2027A is about, permanent protection. Slippage in the rule against the bridge would seriously degrade the natural and scenic qualities of this unique segment. And then there's this question of this kind of odd loophole. And that loophole is actually not a loophole for conventional development. It's referring to things like what color do we paint our house? You know, if we can't agree with the state on what color to paint our house, let's wait a year and see if we can. You can go ahead and paint it orange if you want to. That's the intent of that loophole. It's not an intent to get around outright prohibition of bridges. It's just not the intention. But we can see kind of a pattern of how the Bend Parks and Rec District will continue to hammer away at this plan that they've come up with using kind of essentially bogus kinds of statistics to justify what is really a plan cooked up by a dozen people. It doesn't have the approval of any major public process or in any way approval of the city of Bend. So most of the pro-bridge comments that you've heard favor more trails and bridges. And of course, who doesn't favor more trails and bridges? But these comments have been primarily solicited with no knowledge of the unique features and wildlife value of this reach of the river, and indeed with little or no knowledge of the scenic waterway system. So please support HB 2027 to clarify to the Parks and Rec District in Bend that these ORA protections must be followed, that bridges in this river segment really are prohibited by the state, and to demonstrate to all the private property owners and anyone using this corridor that the waterway rules are in place for good and valid reasons, derived directly from the enacted will and values of all Oregonians as a primary feature of our natural heritage. This place deserves permanent protection from bridges that HB 2027A provides. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Yes, I do. We were just looking, the chair and I were just looking at a map, and it's this one here. Is all this area, is this all developed?
No.
It seems from another picture that it was very sparsely developed. Is that what I'm
yes.
looking at? It's very sparsely developed. And is this line here, is this the city limits?
Yes.
Yes.
So the bridge itself then is outside the city limits.
No, their bridge proposal was firmly inside the city limits, right smack in the middle of the scenic waterway designation. And then, as we heard, they've recently come up with a thing to kind of soften their image and say, oh, well, we're going to move the bridge down to partly on Forest Service property. But it would still be smack in the middle of the state scenic waterway that's protected.
But to follow up, it is outside the urban growth boundary.
No, inside.
It's right.
Inside the city limits, right. Senator Olson, the urban growth boundary.
Chairman Dembrough, may I respond? There's an anomaly here. There's a piece of triangle property down there that's in the forest. It's on the east side of the river, a little triangle piece of property, okay, just west of the urban growth boundary. You'll see it there, a little tiny triangle. That's U.S. Forest Service property. That's okay. Where they want to put the bridge. It's outside the UGB city limits. It's inside the Federal Wild and Scenic River, and it's inside the state scenic waterway. But it's outside the city limits on Forest Service land.
That's what I just asked, if it was outside the city limits, and people said it wasn't.
Can I
but
verify?
It is.
We just went, if I may, Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, this is the piece of property. This is where they're targeting the bridge. This is Forest Service land. This is all national forest. This little piece right over here is also national forest.
Right.
So it's a little bit of it's an anomaly. This is Deschutes County here.
So if you go up to the top of that triangle and go across, that's where they want the bridge.
Right about here.
Yeah.
Right about there, yeah. Beyond the
forest. So it's outside of the city limits, outside
right.
of the UGB.
Correct. But right smack in the middle of the scenic waterway and Wild Scenic River.
Yes.
So we just went through a several-month process where the evaluation was inside the UGB, and just in the last couple of weeks, the Parks Board has apparently indicated that they want this option three. There's nothing to prevent them from going back and wanting to put it back inside.
But let me ask you this. If they were to maintain that option three, mm-hmm. would that be satisfactory?
No. It's still in the scenic waterway.
It's in the scenic waterway.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
and in
the
fact,
entire area is in the state scenic waterway. It stops a mile down at the Central Oregon Irrigation Diversion. So this is all state scenic waterway. Once you get out to the side the city limits, the Wild and Scenic River portion starts up.
So there are no other bridges on the in the scenic waterway.
That is correct. In this section of the county or the city, that is correct.
And miles south of that point is another bridge.
Downstream.
Downstream north, two
which
miles.
Is north.
So outside the city.
Oh,
water.
That's right. Downstream.
Yeah.
The river's going to the north. That's where it got me confused.
Yeah, our river
rivers
goes
aren't,
north.
Rivers aren't supposed to go to the north. They're supposed to go to the south.
The Willamette also.
Yeah, I know. It's good. We're leaders out here.
Chairman,
aren't we?
Could I make one point?
Okay, and then we'll have to move on.
There's a trust issue here. The Park District apparently just came up with this new alignment recently. And in fact, if they're serious about this new alignment, then they should be supporting HB 2027A because it only refers to the part that's inside the urban growth boundary. If they don't want to put a bridge there, they should support this legislation. But the concern obviously is that this is a red herring they're throwing out, that subsequently they will come back inside in this zone that is being protected by HB 2027A and reinvigorate their plans if this protection is not put in place.
I know we're time constrained. Yeah. The bridge that's a mile downstream, which is to the north.
Yes.
Does it connect to trails on both sides?
It absolutely does.
Wait a minute, before you get, you guys are getting excited. on the west side, does that trail connection go all the way down to the Forest Service land?
Not directly, but indirectly, you can certainly get there. Yes.
It does, but not directly along the river.
Right. Okay, it doesn't go along the river.
Yeah.
All trail road, all the way to the river.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you can follow the trail all the way.
So there are trails or proposed trails on both sides of the river.
No.
Is that right?
No. Just on this side, Chair.
Just on the west side.
On the south, on the east side, Chair.
On this side.
Yeah, it is a little confusing. You'd need to see the entire map, but
I've been looking. I've been watching Google Earth and looking at it and following the whole thing up and down, and that's why I was wondering about the connections and seeing the bridges, and I was screwed up because rivers are supposed to go to the south; they're not supposed to go to the north. So when you said downriver, I was screwed up. Mm-hmm. But there are trails that you could use on the west side of the river, which I assume is your side. That map I'm looking at, but they don't run right along the river.
That is correct.
But once you get farther south, then the trail runs along the river. I follow it. It's just a dirt path. Am I not correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Is it possible, Chair Dimbro, to add 30 seconds?
All right, 30 seconds. That's it. Go ahead.
I would also mention that there are six state agencies and the governor is signatory to the Comprehensive Management Plan. One component that Ben Parks and Rec also doesn't mention is there's a recreation capacity in this area, which was put in along with the bridge specifically to avoid this high level of recreation use. And a bridge would violate, I believe, very clearly violate that component of this plan, regardless of whether it's just outside the UGB or just inside the UGB.
Do we have a copy of that plan?
I'm happy to provide it, yes.
Sure. We can get it.
I'll give you mine.
Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Okay, let's have Jim Bruce, Stephen Thompson, or is it Thompson? It's Thomas something. And Bob Brew, please.
Oh, gosh, you're not a wizard, are you? Is that not a wand?
Is Bob Brew here? Or Bob Rell? Is there anybody named Bob? Okay.
Red button right there.
Okay, okay.
Okay, how about Lisa Scales?
Seals.
Seals, sorry.
We have trouble. The handwriting people have is...
We're going to start going to typing at some point. Yep. Okay, Jim, if you could start, please.
Thank you, Chairman Dembro and members of the committee.
My name's the member.
The members.
The remaining member of the committee.
Thank you for your patience.
Not a problem.
Yeah. And by the way, all the testimony, of course, that's been submitted is part of the record, and we all review it as well.
Thank you. Yes.
And some of us have other committees they have to go to after this.
Right.
Busy day.
Yes.
My name is Jim Bruce. I'm a resident of Bend, have been for 25 years with my wife, Nancy. We live about a half a mile from the scenic waterway. I've been listening to testimony today, and I guess I'm the guy that gets to bring up the inconvenient truth. And the inconvenient truth here is environmental. At its core, HB 2027A is an environmental matter involving state environmental law. In this day and age, we must make environmental decisions based on the best available science. And this case is no exception. This is an issue that should be based on biological evidence and not the whim of any local government agency. This is especially true when it comes to dealing with Oregon scenic waterways, areas deliberately set aside by Oregon voters for conservation. I respectfully ask the committee to stand behind its wildlife biologists at ODFW and vote yes on HB 2027A. Here, the scientific evidence, unequivocally supports the objectives of HB 2027A. There is zero scientific evidence supporting Bend Park and Rec's planned bridge development. In 2015, as has stated before, biologists with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife recommended rejection of BPRD's attempt to abolish the Upper Deschutes Bridge prohibition. U.S. Forest Service key elk management area and also statewide Goal 5 deer tumalo deer winter range areas were identified concerns at that time. As a basis for rejecting BRPD's plans, ODFW concluded, and I quote, "These areas are managed to reduce disturbance to deer and elk during winter when they are particularly vulnerable due to colder temperatures and lack of food resources." And I can tell you, after having survived this last winter in Bend, they were happy to have the crossing. ODFW stated further that several recent studies have revealed that recreational activities can be a significant source of disturbance to wildlife. Second point, acting consistently with ODFW's biological opinion, the Oregon Department of Parks and Rec rejected BRPD's bridge amendment in 2016. OPRD concluded that allowing new bridges in the Upper Deschutes Scenic Waterway may encourage development in an area where natural resources would be harmed in contravention of scenic waterway goals. Next point. I'd also draw the committee's attention to a letter submitted to this committee in support of HB 2027 by Dr. David S. Dobkin, dated May 6, 2017. Dr. Dobkin is a PhD professional research scientist and the emeritus executive director of the High Desert Ecological Research Institute in Bend. Among other conclusions, Dr. Dobkin stated in his letter, and I quote, "Recreation and development along much of the river have seriously compromised the ecological integrity and functionality of the riparian corridor for native wildlife. This is not simply my opinion, this is fact." He goes on to say, "Such impacts would compromise the ecological functionality of the most important remaining riparian habitat on the south side of Bend." This is a big deal. Bend Park and Rec, on my next point, Bend Park and Rec has even itself recognized the serious environmental problems with this planned high-use development. It's mind-boggling why Bend Park and Rec would proceed in the face of these risks. They've stated the potential bridge sites appear to be within the mapped floodplain, and the sites on the east side may involve seasonal wetlands and spotted frog habitat. This would assuredly create adverse impacts of habitat for the Endangered Species Act threatened Oregon spotted frog, a species with federally designated critical habitat adjacent to PRD's planned bridge sites. I won't go over the Upper Deschutes Advisory Group findings again. That's been stated many times, other than to really emphasize the fact that hundreds of people in the greater Bend area, including the county, within a one-mile area from the affected area, up to 3 miles away on both sides of the river, 81% of those people advocated for increased waterway protections, made specific recommendations for new protective rules, expressed a desire for further impact assessments, or emphasized limiting further development in and around the state waterway corridor in general. 81%. In concluding, I respectfully ask the committee to please take careful heed of the scientific evidence supporting HB 2027A. Overuse threatens to destroy the wild values that Oregon voters sought to protect in the first place under the Scenic Waterways Act. As stated in the Act, these values include aesthetic, scenic, fish, and wildlife, and scientific qualities. Please stand behind the decisions of the state's agencies, ODFW biologists and Oregon Parks and Rec, and vote yes on HB 2027A. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bruce. Stephen?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Dembrow and Senator Olson. My name is Stephen Thompson. I'm the owner and director of the Helen M. Thompson Wildlife Sanctuary, a 45-acre nature preserve located on both sides of the river and the state scenic waterway, and that's what you see here in this map. I've lived in Central Oregon for 50 years. I have a PhD in zoology with a wildlife emphasis. I served for 8 years on the Deschutes County Planning Commission. I've served on many land use boards and the boards of several conservation groups. Our history in this area goes back to 1967 when my father, an avid fly fisherman, bought a fishing cabin right here on the map. And he, together with my mother, Helen Thompson, who was one of Oregon's leading conservationists, realized that they were looking at one of the finest stretches of river in all of Oregon. This was an area rich with wetlands on both. This wetland area here is extensive. It has standing water, a slough, several ponds. There's riparian habitat on both sides of the river here, and lots of cover for wintering deer and elk. And they realized that how special this was, and decided that they would set out to try to preserve this for all time. This area with its islands in the middle of the river is absolutely teeming with wildlife, very high biodiversity, highly productive of native trout, some of the best spawning gravel we have in the river. Otters, beavers, herons, all kinds of waterfowl inhabit these islands and waters. Bald eagles hunt, and deer and elk find refuge in the wintertime. Birds and mammals of all kinds feed and breed in the summer throughout the preserve. Now, the bad news I have for the Parks Department is that we have long known that this is ideal frog habitat on both sides of the river. We have actually documented frogs now in this area, quite close to where this is the bridge location right here. We have documented spotted frogs in here, photographs. It is actually being filed today with the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Department. So this is going to get a special designation. The rim rock that defines this wildlife sanctuary runs on the north, on the east, and the south. It's 250 feet high. It's a sheer cliff, and it separates this river corridor here, this area of special interest as it's known, from all of the surrounding area, which you can't see in an aerial photo. But this is completely isolated from everything that's going on around it. This stuff up here, everything that goes up here, it might as well be happening on Mars. This is way down in a river canyon. So the boundary that you see, it corresponds to an area of special interest and also the waterway overlay zone. And it's the mission of the Thompson Wildlife Sanctuary to conserve important year-round habitat for riparian and wetland wildlife species. This is the only stretch of river left between Bend and Sun River without a high-use trail. Pedestrians, dogs, bicycles. And by the way, the Deschutes River Trail is continuous all the way from Bend to Sun River. So that myth needs to be dispelled. It goes just above where this map is from the Mill District all the way around and connects right in here to the Forest Service. It was known in 1980 when I was on the Planning Commission, it was known as the Deschutes River Trail. It's been renamed. That portion has been renamed the Hall Road. I don't know why, but there is a continuous Deschutes River Trail. What they want now is something east-west here. So I've submitted a lot of written testimony, and I won't take any more of your time in there. We're in a position now, I will say, to pursue our educational goal of introducing school groups to a natural, undeveloped, unspoiled section of their Deschutes River so they can see what that's really like. To conclude, a bridge at this location here, as proposed by Parks, would severely and negatively impact the sanctuary and its wildlife. Our mission of conservation would be virtually eliminated. For that reason, I oppose a bridge, and I support Bill 2027A and its enhanced protections for the state scenic waterways, and I thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. Can I just ask you, since you have the pointer,
sure.
The proposed development that's going in,
that's
where,
here.
Where would that be?
That's up here.
Rim?
Yes, up on top of that rim. And as I said, it might as well be in another county. It's so high up and set back from the river.
Now, I just kind of, if I may, Mr. Chair, I just kind of got back on Google Earth again. And because I like it, this is the only way I can see what it really looks like. I noticed that the bridge that's downstream, it's a paved bridge. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
And that trail runs through and goes through a subdivision up there. There is a trail along the river for a while, but then it comes up and goes up onto a ridge and into a subdivision. And then down goes along through a subdivision and comes back out again, but it doesn't get down near the river. Am I correct in that? And then there are some, it appears to be footpaths that someone has walked. There's an old, it looks like an old farmstead or something like that is right in the bend of the river there, and the trail kind of goes by that. But it also looks like it goes up beyond that to the outside, as you were pointing out. Is that all correct? Do I have that right? It's what Google Earth showed me. And that little thing there, it's got a whole bunch of buildings.
Well,
it's down in there. Well, I just got to get this straight in my head. If they want me to vote on this, I got to know what I'm voting on. There's where that white line is, that's a ridge. That's a rim, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a rim.
Yeah.
This is a rim.
Yeah.
This
and
is
the
a rim.
The building I'm talking about is up there, right in the top in the middle.
This?
Yeah, right there. What is that?
That actually has been built since this picture was taken. That's a house up on top of the rim outside the riparian corridor.
Well, I'll show you guys this later, but never mind. Mine's up further. Okay, I got the idea where it goes now.
Oh, may I add one thing quickly?
We don't care about deer.
One of the things...
If there's smallmouth bass in there, we care about that.
We've heard the term connectivity mentioned with regard to the trail system, but One of the issues right now before the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife that's very much on the front burner is the connectivity with for deer range. There's a threat to their populations because of the lack of connectivity and the inability to make full use of their range. It so happens that this area right here, connecting the northwest part of the Forest Service to the southeast part of the Forest Service, is the crossing point for deer. And I just have a couple of pictures to illustrate that point. In all four seasons, right on our sanctuary, this is where the deer cross the river to connect with their full range. So it's really a critical area. And this sort of impact would pretty much put an end to that.
Okay, thank you. Lisa, let's wrap up this panel.
All right,
panel.
I will be very quick. All right, good afternoon, Senator Dembro and the committee, remaining committee. My name is Lisa Seals, and I have a PhD in interdisciplinary ecology, specializing in water management and policy here in Oregon. I have dedicated my career to helping strike a balance between natural resource conservation and human development. I'm also the secretary of the board of directors for the Coalition for the Deschutes, which is a 501c3 organization focused on education and advocacy about the Upper Deschutes River. So as both a resident of Central Oregon and on behalf of the Coalition for the Deschutes, I'm here today to testify in support of HB 2027A. Although I am an avid recreationalist and I frequently hike and bike on all of the Deschutes River trails, I am opposed to the construction of this footbridge in the Deschutes River State Scenic Waterway. Really quickly, I'm going to diverge from my prepared testimony to set the record straight on an important point about the ballot or the bond measure that has been referred to by Ben Parks and Rec. That bond measure passed by a mere 1%. And the flagship projects for that bond measure were not, in fact, connectivity and the trail system. They were actually the now very contentious Whitewater Park in Bend and the ice skating pavilion. So those that was bond measure. So I just wanted to point that out. So going back to my testimony, as you know, Central Oregon has and continues to experience rapid growth that encroaches upon wildlife habitat and important corridors. The construction of this proposed bridge will significantly diminish the integrity of a significantly remaining critical wildlife corridor. So House Bill 2027A would prevent that from happening. So wildlife disturbance by human development is well documented and uncontested, and mitigation is necessary. And even the Bend Park and Recreation District has acknowledged these impacts by banning bikes and dogs in their Riley Ranch Nature Preserve. So building a footbridge in the Deschutes River State Scenic Waterway threatens wildlife by segmenting corridors and degrading this extremely important habitat. In this instance, the trade-offs between recreational access and wildlife protection are really just too great. And for exactly these reasons, ODFNW has submitted a letter in opposition to this proposed bridge and supporting this legislation. So additionally, I want to note that I strongly support the State Scenic Waterway Program, and I'm concerned that altering the rules to construct a footbridge could set a dangerous precedent that could have unintended consequences for other waterways in our state. The values that are embodied in the State Scenic Waterway concept are just too important to disregard, and this bill will maintain those protections for the section of the Deschutes River. I, along with all the other members of the Coalition for the Deschutes, stand with the members of the Oregon House who unanimously voted for this bill, and I urge you to do the same. So thank you very much for your time and consideration today.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. Thank you, all three of you.
Doctor, your testimony, yes. You have a PhD in water management?
I do, yes.
I have had a full bottle of water, and I'm concerned about water management at this time. I'm glad your testimony was short.
I'm inclined to get you a reusable bottle.
Okay, let's hear from our final panel, which is John McKinnon and Tyson Kiever. Okay, we're going to bring up a proponent and an opponent on the same panel.
Uh-oh.
Do we dare? But
chair in between.
I think it's fitting that we end in this way. And I have John signed up first, so John, if you would start us off, and then Tyson.
Okay, great. Thank you, Chair Dembro and members of the committee. My name's John McKinnon. I'm a lifelong river advocate. I worked with the Upper Deschutes Conservation Council, worked as a fishing guide, and I've spent time in the Upper Deschutes Scenic Waterway. nearly my entire life. There have been a lot of submissions to this committee, but I respectfully ask that the committee direct its attention to what the scientists and conservation groups have to say in this instance. And I think you'll find in that case that the evidence is overwhelmingly in favor of House Bill 2027A. Ultimately, we're dealing here with a protected environmental area under state law. These issues should be decided at the state level and not at the local level. This is not a local planning thing. And management of these protected areas should be based on science. As we just heard, House Bill 2027A has a lot of scientific support. This bill has support from biologists at ODFW. We just talked about that. Dr. David S. Dobkin, a PhD wildlife biologist with extensive experience in and around the Deschutes. He submitted a letter for this hearing that's in the record. We heard from Craig Lindberg, Lisa Seals. This bill has support from respected and longstanding conservation groups, Coalition for the Deschutes, Oregon Wild, the Oregon Natural Desert Association, or ONDA. We know there are wetlands in this area and critical habitat for the Oregon spotted frog, which is listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. And I think Oregon Parks and Recreation Director Lisa Sumption had a pretty accurate quote today in her press release. She said, "As important as recreation is to our mission, it has to be balanced with our need to protect resources that make recreation possible. Changing rules, especially in a way that might encourage more visible riverside development, is contrary to the purpose of the scenic waterway system." So with that, I respectfully ask the committee to please support our ODFW biologists, support the Oregon Department of Parks and Recreation in its decision that it just made today. Please direct your testimony to, or direct your attention to the testimony submitted by Coalition for the Deschutes, Oregon Wild, ONDA, and the people you've heard from today. And I ask that you please support House Bill 2027A. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Tyson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tyson Kiever. Thanks for letting me speak here today. I have written testimony that I'll submit. I'm going to cut right to it and go a little bit off map. I'm an Oregonian. I got my degree in planning from the University of Oregon. I'm very familiar with the public planning process. I'm married to a planner. I have two daughters, resident of Bend. We live in the north side of town. My dad lives down south, his house down the Sun River. And the connectivity of that trail is something we've watched in the paper and the public debate for a really long time. There's been lots of slander on the public process, the surveys that have been conducted over the years, and the integrity of those surveys. We are incredibly unfortunate, very fortunate in Bend to have the Parks and Recreation District, and the board that is longstanding board and voted over and over and over again is enough survey results for me, unless potentially Russia has interfered with that election as well. There's good representation by what Bend wants. So a couple points of correction. There's a 600-acre off-leash dog park that is owned by the Forest Service, managed by the Forest Service on the other side of this. This is a scenic and important waterway. I completely agree. I'm a tree-hugging dirt worshiper, but that area is impacted. There's other policy and legislation, other work that could be done to further improve that. But we're talking about a footbridge to connect trails that are almost all the way connected that have been a long time coming. There's no surprises here. I had to drive over 200 miles to get here to represent my position that this is good policy. This is not good policy. Keeping this in the local community is good policy. And I respectfully request that you let this die in committee and take it back to Bend and the voters of Bend and those of Deschutes County and not let this bill preclude the whole trail system for a 20-mile stretch for a couple people that are really, really passionate about their property. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, I do have a question. Tyson, yes. You mentioned the voters of Bend and the voters of Deschutes County. Now, Bend has a much larger population than Deschutes County as a voting base. So don't you think that that would be an unfair election if you allowed Bend to, because we see this in the state all the time. I live south of Portland, but Portland dictates what we do. I kind of take it the same way with Bend and the folks of Deschutes County.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, respectfully, the trails are almost all the way built. We're talking about a connection, a very small fraction here. The voters have spoken along the way, and they have representatives that can go to bat for them in the local arena, but we're removing this a couple hundred mile round trip from those people participating in the process by having to address this bill here today.
follow up?
Yes.
When you say a couple hundred, was that a couple hundred mile, the trip that you made to here?
Correct.
See, the one thing that is extremely difficult for all of us up here on the dais is the fact that we don't live there. And we don't see the everyday occurrence. Well, I can relate to my community, what my community looks like and what they want to do. And that's why I like to have Google Earth here so I can follow things. But it's interesting that the folks in this area want us to be the arbiters of an issue that you have to deal with. But the concern that we have, or at least as I have as a legislator, is everybody gets a fair shake. And if it was a vote against, bend against the Deschutes County folks, I know who's going to win that battle every time. I'm in the minority. I know exactly what it feels like. So the question is, do we look at a system that is very ecologically sound and diverse and put a wood bridge over the top of it, or do we tell the people that live in the county that live closest to it that, you know, there shouldn't be a bridge? It's very difficult for us to make this kind of decision.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
Senator
look
Olson.
At him first.
Yeah. you bring up a really great point, but the process to participate in this process, what Parks and Rec has to go through here, is a very involved NEPA process that involves stakeholders, members of the community, of the overarching community, beyond outside of the city of Bend. It's a very elaborate process. It gets very scientific and engages stakeholders along the way. I encourage us to let that process work itself out.
Follow up then? Well, come on, you've got me working overtime now. You've got to let me ask questions.
Okay, let's have John respond, though.
Yeah, I'd like to add just a couple things. First of all, with respect to NEPA, I think that the scientific evidence is already clear, and it's pretty apparent how that NEPA process would go and how it would end up. I really don't see the need for that, given that we know scientifically where things stand. In addition to that, I would like to add that the trails are actually already connected via a trail called the Hall Road. Doesn't go right along the river for a short stretch, but it ultimately connects the Deschutes Trail to Sun River to Bend. So it is connected. Thank you.
Okay.
Here's a question. On the Parks and Rec, that is the Parks and Rec Department of Bend, correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, that is correct. I'm talking about Bend Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec Department of Deschutes County.
Correct. Mm.
So it is, okay, I just want to be clear on that. So the Parks and Rec Department of Bend is trying to build a bridge outside the city of Bend.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, understanding is there's multiple options still on the table the community is trying to vet, and the Parks and Recs Board is trying to vet that process, and they're proposing multiple options that none have been solidified at this point, and nothing has been approved by the process.
Okay.
Yeah. But this eliminates the ability to have that process.
Right. I just wanted to be clear about that.
Okay, so let me just make some closing comments. You know, first of all, I want to thank all of you who came this distance to share with us. I've learned a lot. A week ago, I knew nothing about this. In fact, someone came and talked to me a week ago, or maybe it wasn't even a week ago. It was the end of last week, and kind of warned me that this was going to be a contentious bill. And I said, I haven't heard from anybody about it. And within a half hour, my email inbox was swamped. We have a lot of research that we're going to have to do on this issue. So, you know, one of the downsides, you heard reference earlier on that this was a gut and stuff that came in late in the process on the House side. So the House really never got a chance to, you know, really to have the kind of hearing that we've had here today. So what that means is there's a lot more pressure on us to, you know, really look at all the written material and to, you know, to ponder, you know, the testimony and have conversations and figure out how to go forward. And so, you know, the next step for this would be a work session where we would vote on it, vote on any potential amendments to it. I've heard reference to something that Senator Knoop may be working on, and I had a conversation with him yesterday. So we'll see. There's still some work left to do on this. We will have to make a decision, this committee, by June 2nd, I think, is our last day to work bills. So sometime in the next couple of weeks, we're going to figure out what we're doing. And I promise you we'll be looking, you know, very, very long and hard at this issue. So with that, Again, thank you for coming, and I will close our public hearing on House Bill 2027 and adjourn the committee until tomorrow. 7 and adjourn the committee until tomorrow.